So I'm assuming you're all here to learn about gardening. Yeah? You came to the right session. All right, we got one more minute. You know, this side's popular too. You guys can, people can sit over here. They don't bite much. Okay. One more minute. All right, we'll give one more minute for people to come in. All right, let's get going. How's everybody doing? Good? Yeah, enjoying the conference. Come on, show some enthusiasm. Yeah, there we go. Jeez. How's the conference? It's all right. Good. Okay, so we are going to talk about, and I'm assuming the reason you're here, is we're going to talk about Azure SQL Database. Okay, not gardening. Who here is using Azure SQL Database? Okay, good number of you. Good. Congratulations. You guys can go. I'm kidding. Who here is familiar with Azure? Okay, the rest of you, or the rest of you here, just understand more about Azure SQL Database. Is that true? Okay, good. All right. So the purpose of this is just there's we're gonna have two parallel tracks here. We're gonna talk about those that are using Azure SQL Database and kind of what's new, and not really what's new, but you know, you've seen the announcements about the new service tiers and things like that. We're going to talk about that. For those that are not familiar with Azure SQL Database, you should get something out of this as well, about why this really is really, you know, why the cloud is important and why going to Azure SQL Database, you know, from on-prem to Azure SQL Database matters, right? This is not a primer into what Azure SQL Database is. If you have a question, raise your hand. I'd like to keep this lively any time during the session. So hopefully, you know, this is not a primer into Azure SQL Database. This is going to make some assumption that, you know, you know what it is, okay? So hopefully we won't lose some of you. All right, so let's get going. Are you guys familiar with this conference? Anybody? Okay, then you need to be. All right, this is a free online conference all about Azure, right? Given by not Microsoft. It's put on by Microsoft, but it's done by Azure MVPs. So it's all online, all through Channel 9, October 21st. Scott Guthrie does the keynote for an entire hour and a half, and then MVPs present live from Redmond all day. Okay. So, azureconf.net, register. It's if you want to know everything and anything about Azure, so the new services like DocDB, Azure Search, SQL Database, performance, websites, anything, that's your conference. There's quite a few sessions, okay? All right, so let's keep going. Let's go. Here's what I need you to get out of this session, right? Those that are using Azure SQL Database, why have we done what we have done? And let me rephrase that. We're going from web to business. We're going to these new tiers. Why did we go to these new tiers? Why is it important that we're going to these new tiers? How do you get the predictable performance, right? And how does this, with these new tiers, how do you get the business continuity? And what do these business continuity mean for these new service tiers, okay? From that, if you guys have any questions, we are completely interested in your feedback as to, for those that are using Azure SQL Database, what are you seeing, that kind of feedback. How can we improve these? But this session is all about why are we, you know, what are the new service tiers and what does that mean for you for performance improvements and a lot of the features that you're familiar with on-prem. We good with that? Okay, let's keep going. So, we're going to talk about two things, but we're going to talk about these in depth pretty much, right? Performance and business continuity. And when we get into business continuity, I'll explain sort of what that means in more detail. But performance is, we'll talk about that first. When we talk about performance, there's really these four areas that we're going to be looking at. First and foremost is why we did what we did. Why did we come out with these new service tiers? And when we introduced these new SKUs, why did we do that, and what are the concepts around these new SKUs, right? Then we'll talk about the new service tiers, what do they mean, and then kind of sort of the usage models around these new service tiers. What are we seeing from the field? What are we seeing from customers and partners and things like that, right? Okay, so why did we make this change? So the web and business, you guys are all familiar with the web and business tiers. These have been around for quite some time. But the number one complaint we had from customers was that performance. Meaning, how many of you guys run a query today, and it runs great today, but tomorrow you run it and it doesn't run so well? How many of you guys ran into that, right? Okay, we totally understand that. So let's back the bus up a minute, and let's give some background. The number one goal when we decided to, you know, we were doing this PaaS offering, SQL Server as a Service, was that we wanted to make this model easy for people to understand, right? And if you're familiar with it, it's just sign up and go, create a database, and take advantages of the Azure benefits, right? So from a database perspective, that's physical administration versus logical administration. Spin up a database, done, right? We handle everything for you, and it works great. But what we found was that people, doesn't matter, and the way we charged was how much data you have in your database. Good model, but it wasn't perfect, because it doesn't matter the size of your database or how much you're paying, what do you guys want most out of your database? Performance, right? I want to run a query today, and I want it to run the same today as it ran yesterday, and I want it to run tomorrow the same way it ran today. And the problem with, you know, talking about web and business is we made the model simple, it worked great, but the problem we ran into was that it's a shared environment, right? So we had my database is on the same physical server, could be on the same physical server as your database. So what I was doing was I was fighting for resources, right? And so it ran great today, but tomorrow I have a noisy neighbor and he's robbing resources from me. And so my database isn't going to run that well. So how do we do that? And then we tried to make things better, and what we did is we sort of said, all right, well, we're going to do something called throttling to help things out, right? How many of you run into throttling? Yeah, a lot of you, right? Kind of worked, but it kind of didn't work, right? So it was a simple model. It worked great. It did this physical administration versus logical administration. But the performance that you run into really depends on not you, but your neighbor, right? How busy is your neighbor? How busy are the other databases on that database, okay? So we decided, all right, let's back the bus up a little bit and let's look at what we can do, right? So then we introduced these new SKUs, these new service tiers. We first came out with premium, right? We then came out with basic and standard. And what we did here is we said, we're not going to charge you for the size of your database, right? What we are going to charge you was we want to give you predictable performance. We want to be able to give you, say, what I run today will run well tomorrow, and we're going to do that through resource governance. So if you're familiar with SQL Server on-prem, they have the resource governor. This is a significant change over throttling, right? So what means now is if in this case, is that we added capacity, we introduced the premium, the predictable performance, so what we have now is what you run today, ran yesterday, we'll get the same performance as today. Then we added the basic and standard tiers. What we're going away from is paying for disk space and paying for these premium offerings, or these certain offerings. That's what we're gonna talk about when we talk about the business continuity, right? We introduced bigger database sizes, we introduced this predictable performance. What I need you to understand and take away from here is that the resource governance replaces the throttling. So when you move to a basic, standard, or premium tier, throttling goes away. You should not get throttled. There's still throttling, but it's so low. You should not get throttled. And what that means is that, and we'll talk about this in more detail here in a second, what this means is that you have your own dedicated resources, and you have those resource limits. So in a throttling perspective, when you got throttled, bad things could happen, right? We killed your connection, or we prevented you from connecting for a certain amount of time, right? And that's a bad thing. And so we backed the bus up and we said, let's not do that. We give you dedicated resource, you get predictable performance. And when you hit those metrics, when you hit those resource, the limits of those resources, we won't throttle you, but what we will do is we will scale you back. We'll slow you down, but we will not terminate connections, okay? And we'll wait for those resources to come back, right? So we just slow you down, but we do not terminate connections, right? But what you do get, and I'll show you this in a demo, is you do get predictable performance, right? So the query you run today takes however many seconds. We'll take the same today and tomorrow and the next day, okay? We good with that so far? Okay, so if you have any questions, let me know. Okay, but again, throttling goes away. Okay, and the last point I want to make here is that it doesn't matter how many customers or how many databases are on that machine, there's no such thing anymore as a noisy neighbor. Right? Those other databases on that box will not affect your database on that box when you go to a basic premium or standard or premium, right? No more noisy neighbor. They will not have an impact on your database at all, okay? And that's a very good thing. Okay, so let's talk about some concepts, right? Database throughput units and the benchmark, okay? How many of you have heard of the DTUs? Okay, you guys know what these DTUs are? Let's talk about these in detail, okay? So if you think about how the web and business tiers worked, right, this was... Today, I have hundreds or thousands of databases on a machine. They're all fighting for resources, right? They're all having their own workloads. They're sharing the physical resources on that box. You're fighting for contention. But this is where the resource governance comes in because you could get throttled, but with resource governance, that goes away, right? This changes with the new service tiers. Web and business, you guys understand that this is going to go away probably next year sometime. The new service tiers is where you want to go, and we're going to talk about how the DTUs work, right? So here's how it works, okay? Think about it this way, right? You've got a box, you've got your, in the Azure Data Center, we have these computers, these servers, and think of a DTU as a mini computer within that side computer. That computer will have its own dedicated compute, memory, CPU, reads and writes, right, dedicated to that box, and every database is assigned. It is basically given to that DTU, right? So think of a DTU as a little computer within that server in that data center. Okay, it is basically a boundary that has dedicated resources, memory, CPU, reads and writes IOs. So writes to the transaction logs, reads are up for I/O, dedicated to that DTU, right? What this means is that we carve out a bunch of these little DTUs, right? And so we says for a basic tier, you get this amount, you can have this amount of DTUs. For a standard tier, you get this amount of DTUs, things like that. A DTU is just a boundary. It is just a way to organize and say, here's a little computer that are dedicated to your resources, okay? Again, the key component here is the governance, right? There's no more throttling. There's just the ability, we just slow you down a little bit, right? The DTU is simply just a construct. That's all it is, a construct that we use to describe these little boxes inside the server that says, when you spin up a standard tier, you get this many DTUs, right? That's all it is, and these are dedicated to you. No more noisy neighbors, right? So what we are doing is we say, based on that, what we're doing is we're sort of up leveling this concept one more. But that is, that we're not basically constraining you to just CPU, but you have all these different. It's basically what we call a blended measure. So a DTU is really a blended measure of CPU, memory, and reads and write rates required to run your database. That's all it is. Okay, does this make sense? Okay, so this is how we give you, so like that box on the left, when you say I want a S1, you get X amount of DTUs, and so your workload could be start floating around in there, so you get more compute versus writes and versus reads and dedicated memory, right? What's important to understand here is that it's a blended measure, so we'll see this in a little bit on how you can determine. The key point here is With web and business, we basically said, look, let's think in terms of IOPS. How many IOPS are we getting on our database? And that's not it anymore. This is a paradigm shift. I need you guys to think that we're not talking IOPS anymore. This is a percentage, right? What we are talking about is what is the percentage of the left in that DTU. So for example, what we're saying is that, for example, you could have five DTUs assigned. So for example, a basic tier premium, you get five DTUs for your database. Right? There are system DMVs out there to tell you how much of percentage of that DTUs you are using and how much is available. So you can look at, maybe I'm using, for example, I'm using 60% memory of this DTU, so I've got 40% left. So you could start getting more granular as to what's my performance going to be, how much more space do I have to play around with, right? So we give you a percentage to tell you where do you stand as far as these DTUs. But understand that even though in this case, right, there's in this example I've got 60% using 60% memory of my DTU, you've got 40% of your memory left. That's 40% of your memory. No one else can touch that memory. Right? This is where that predictable performance comes from. You are not fighting for resources anymore. I've got 5 DTUs. That means this amount of memory. That is your memory. No one else's memory. So you're not fighting for those resources anymore. So we need to start thinking in terms of not IOPS anymore. And we'll look at this in a little more detail here in the next couple of slides. But now in terms of percentage. How much percentage do I have left to work with? Does this make sense? Okay? So these are DTUs. So So early on, people thought this DTU does not stand for database transaction. It stands for database throughput unit. How much are available resources do you have left to you in a percentage? Okay? So we're talking about performance, okay? We're talking about percentage, not IOPS. So the question is, and this is what we get asked a lot, the question is, how did we determine how much memory CPU to assign per DTU, for example, right? And we did this by benchmarking. So we came up with a benchmark that is basically a reasonable OLTP workload that combines, you know, several tables, different types of transaction types, different types of combination of inserts, selects, updates, deletes, things like that. What I'm going to ask you to do is, who's familiar with Channel 9? You guys familiar with Channel 9? So if you on this slide deck, if you'll download it, there's a link. And what we did is we had we interviewed the guy that's in charge for SQL Server benchmarking, right? And we said, and he's in charge of determining how we do benchmarking for SQL Server, and he's also for SQL Database. So it wasn't just a blind, here's how much CPU and memory we're going to assign to each DTU. We went and spent a lot of time determining for each CPU what is the best performance we can get for how much memory, CPU, reads and writes for every DTU. And that was our benchmark numbers, okay? Now, there's an important distinction here, right? So DTU stands for database throughput unit, not database transaction unit. We bring this up because people confuse this. It's all under that these numbers, these transaction numbers, have nothing to do. So these benchmark numbers are in no way correlated to the DTU numbers. Don't get those confused, okay? They are not the same. Right, DTU means how many transactions you can get, you know, how much memory you have, CPU, things like that. They are not correlated at all to the numbers we can get for data, for our benchmark numbers. The benchmark numbers are simply here's the best performance we can get if you sign up for like a P3 or whatever it is, right? That's what we're talking about. Okay. So the numbers of the benchmark output is just an example of the numbers. It's just kind of a way to say here's the best performance you can get based on a P3 or whatever, right? Given your type of transaction. That's also good, you know, we can't say because it also depends on your environment. It also depends on the type of queries you run, things like that, right? But it's sort of a best practice. Does this make sense? Okay. So don't mix those two numbers up, right? DTU numbers are not the same or in any way correlated to these benchmark numbers. We're just bringing this up because it's basically we're saying this was not a blind, throw a dart, stick, these are the numbers. It's we put some thought into it. Okay? Okay, moving on. So the new service tiers. okay? And if you've been watching some of the blog posts from Azure, you'll know that there's some interesting and awesome announcements that just came out lately, right? So there's basic, standard, and premium. How many DTUs you get per tier? So 5 for a basic. For a standard, there's an S1, S2, S0. We just announced an S0. So an S0, S1, S2. And how many DTUs get per tier there? And then for P1, P2, and P3, how many DTUs you can get? So these are significant, okay? So that's fairly self-explanatory. The next one is the SQL database benchmark numbers, right? How many, what you can expect for, depending on what tier you pick. Now, I want you to pay attention here, because you'll notice, just have the pointer thingy, right? This is for basic, transactions per hour, for standard, transactions per minute, and for premium, transactions per second, right? Why would we do that? What's that? Why would we do that? Yeah, you can't answer a question with a question. Why would we do that? Well, so think about, yeah, say that again. Well, because we're really targeting different, you know, if you go back a few slides, right? We had these different web and business tiers. I think, let me go back a few slides. Where did I go? Was it that one? Yeah, maybe I got rid of it. We did this because, right, there's different application types, right? Some, you know, someone that's going to spin up a web business edition isn't going to need, you know, that many transactions per second. Right, so what we're trying to do is really target the different types of customers, the different types of applications, and the key here is that, you know, you're not tied. If you say, okay, I want a S1, you're not tied to that, because you can go, you know what, I don't need that. That's too much for me. I don't need that type of predictable performance. Let me go down to an S0 or even a basic, for example. Right, we didn't want to say. Right, and there's pricing, and we'll talk about pricing here in a little bit. Actually, it's right there, right? This is really to target the different types of customers, right? How many of you guys need, you know, 730, those number of transactions per second, right? Some do, some don't, right? So some customer that's going to use a web edition right now isn't going to say, well, I need, you know, a P3, you know, thousands of transactions a second type of thing. Okay, I don't need 800 DTUs for my performance. So what this does is we would rather not pigeonhole you into a specific, like we did with web and business, but let's give you the flexibility to say, well, let me start playing around a little bit and see what really do I need? Okay, does that make sense? What are your thoughts? Don't be shy. Yeah. So yeah, so I think, yeah, the question is, does that mean I can run 3,467 transactions in 1 second and then nothing for the rest of the hour? Or do I get like one transaction a second? So you're limited to that number of transactions per second. So I'm not. I don't think it's going to be. I don't know the specific answer to that. But what I'm going to say, I can't believe what we would do is if you run 3,467 transactions in the first second, you're done. I can't believe we would do that. I think there's just a number of, you know, what's the kind of performance you're going to get out of that, right? I'm sorry. Yeah, it's standard transaction. Yeah, insert, update, delete, right? Yeah, it is. That's still a transaction, right? That's still a transaction. Right? Anything CRUD, right? A CRUD is a transaction. Create, read, update, delete, transaction, right? So I guess to answer your question, I think this is kind of the we have to think again in terms of the DTUs, database throughput. So in other words, we probably won't get the performance. So if we start moving from left to right, from basic to premium, we're starting to get better performance. We're just not going to get that type of performance from a basic, right? We're going to be limited to how much, just kind of the less performance, but we may not need that kind of performance that we're going to get from a P3 type of performance. I'm sorry?
There is no quotas, it's pure performance.
No quotas, just pure performance. And by quota, you mean?
So you're saying, let's use up all of my availability.
Yeah, I don't think I really don't think it's performance. I think it's transaction count. And that's a good point. Yeah, this is not a quota. I can't, right? I'm sorry, you just spent 3,467 transactions in the first 5 minutes of your hour. Please go have some coffee, come back at 2 o'clock. Right, I don't think that's definitely not it, right? But I can understand, the process that that's not it. I think it's just we're saying you're limited to how the number of transactions you can put through per that period of time. So you can have from two gigabytes to up to 250 gigabytes, and then from 250 gigabytes up to 500 gigabytes. So I'll open the portal. We'll show you. We can do a few, right? That'll be part of the demo, okay? But I think the key here is that again, your maximum DB size 2 gigabytes, 250 gigabytes, and then 500 gigabytes, right? And this is a far cry. And one of the things we're going to talk about when we talk to some of the scenarios is, how to sort of get around some of those. What we're seeing in the field to get around some of those limits. And again, this is. The title of the session is Why SQL Database? So one of the things that we talked about in one of the sessions that I've done is kind of is scalability and not just performance, but scalability. So how many of you guys have databases bigger than 500 gig? Right? A lot of you. And you're like, well, I still can't use SQL Database. Well, you know what? There's a lot of the patterns and practices that we're going to talk about here to say, let's get even better performance. And it's still use, less money by maybe sharding our data. And we're going to actually talk about that. Right, and there's a whole, apparently they didn't schedule that here, but I'm happy to talk about this at any time this week, sharding, right, and how to scale your database and to actually get better performance, and we'll actually talk about this, right, this is an interesting content, and this is a topic I really love. Okay, and then what you're paying for, and this is, you guys need to understand, people were screaming at us because we said, all right, here is our, here's our preview prices, and here's our non-preview prices. But they said, no. So we actually drastically lowered our cost. So these are our GA prices, less than half of what we said they were going to be. So this makes it even more compelling now, right? So, competitor that starts with an A, beat that, okay, type of thing. So this makes it even more compelling, okay? Any questions so far? So yeah, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Yeah, I will get to that. I promise. Okay. All right. Let's move on. Okay. We'll do a couple more slides and then get into a demo, a performance demo. So this just really says, how do I change performance level? So all of you that are on web and business, how do I start moving from web and business to basic, standard, or premium? Or even if I'm in one of those, how do I start moving around? Because I may spin up an S1 and say, you know what, I don't need that. My percentages and my DTUs are pretty low. I can probably get away with an S0. So how do I move around those? And this is interesting. I can still use PowerShell. We have a REST API. We can do that. We actually have a .NET library that's kind of a wrapper around this REST API. So for you .NET developers out there, very easy to change these things, okay? We also have a T-SQL, right? If you're familiar with, alter database, set it, modify addition, blah, 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 blah. The only difference here is that in the T-SQL, you cannot modify the, like I can say in PowerShell, the REST API, in the .NET library, I can say, go to standard S1. In T-SQL, I cannot do that. I can only say go to standard, and it defaults to S0. Or if I say premium, go to P1. That's right. That will change. So the only difference right now is in T-SQL is that I cannot specify the level. I can just say go to standard or go to premium, and then it'll default to the, right? Okay, but I can do with PowerShell, REST, the .NET library, I can say go to premium and go to a P3. Okay? Okay, so, and there's the, and I'll actually pull up the portal, I'll show you how to do that. That's, yeah. All right, and next. Okay, now, a lot of you have asked for this. You want to determine, you know, not just looking at, we have this new DMV that's called sys.resourcestats. This graph here is really based on sys.resourcestats, and a lot of people have been, a lot of the complaints that we've heard is that, you know, this portal here, this graph, is only is a minimum of 5-minute interval. And a lot of you that have high OLTP transactions want a more granular than 5 minutes, right? Okay, we've heard you. Trust us, this will be changing. Very, you know, I can't give you a timeline, but very soon, it'll be changing soon, right? We want to be able to give you the ability to say, let's get a more detailed, granular look into, and more often, and more frequent, as to what's going on in our database. What's our percentage? How are our DTUs doing? How can we get a better look into there, right? Now, along with that, we do have, when you're doing performance tuning, who does query performance tuning in here? Okay, who's familiar with these DMVs? Right, you should be, especially when you're doing SQL database, you know, cloud development, you must be familiar with these DMVs. We did a whole session last year on, you know, if you're a DBA, what does being a DBA in the world of a cloud mean, right? And one of because there's no profiler, right? There's no way to troubleshoot. There's no way to get at what's my database doing. These DMVs are your best friend. So get very familiar with these, right? Query stats, query plan, exec request. This tells you, you know, where's my hangup? What queries are executing? What are my transaction plans? What queries are giving me the most problems right now? Things like that, right? So these queries are the ones that, these DMVs are the ones you want to become familiar with. The master, the sys.resource stats gives you a granular look into, look, here's the what's going on right now, but we're gonna make that change to make it more more granular, less than 5 minutes, okay? So those improvements are coming. Okay, demo time. And this is a very simple demo, but but it does show you the performance, predictable performance. So what I have here is what I did. Okay, so I'm connected to, wonder if this works. Nope, it zooms out over there. Can you guys see that all right? So I have several databases. I have a basic, so let me actually open the portal. And here's my databases, okay? So there's my basic. Where's my basic? Basic, it's a basic tier. I've got an S1, it's a standard S1, and I have a premium, a standard premium, right? So I went and created databases, and it's really easy to do. New, custom create, what do I want? That easy, right? So if I say basic, I get, you know, up to 5 DTUs, and I get up to 2 gig. If I do premium, I get up to 800 DTUs and up to 500 gig, right? We make that very easy. So I created these databases. Now, also let me show you while I'm here. Let's say I'm going to take this, the Northwind database, a staple database that you're all familiar with, right? And I'm going to go into that database and I'm going to say, scale, right? And the change is very easy. I'm going to go to standard, S2, save. Right, that easy to go from. Like, so I can use the portal. I can use the, you know, I can use PowerShell. That easy to go from one to the other. Right. Okay. So I'm going to discard those changes. So what I've got is I have those three data. So there's my basic. There's my S1. There's my P1. And what I did is I created a simple table. In each one, it's one table. And it's a very simple table. And there's it's just. 4 tables with, I think there's about several thousand GUIDs in each table, right? So all I'm doing is I'm saying, just go and do the select and do cross joins. So I'm going to run this same query against the basic, run this query against my standard, and run this query against the premium. And let's see what kind of performance, what kind of times we get. Now, I'm going to tell you right now that this server, this one, is in the West U.S. data center, so I'm literally going across the pond. So the internet connection could be pretty slow, so bear with me, right? So let me kick this off. So let's just kick off. I'm going to set no count on because we're going to take a look at some information. So let me run this, kick that off, and that's going. Let me kick off my S1. Let's do it this way. We'll execute that. We'll run that. And we'll do the same thing on premium. Okay, ready, go. All right, and so you can see the timer down. You can see the timer down here. So let's see how long it takes. Which one's gonna finish first? Who said basic? dude, out. No. All right, so premium finished in 14 seconds. Standard is still running. This in my testing should finish in about 49 seconds. And I'm gonna be honest, and I'm gonna show you this again. When I was testing this last couple days, this is spot on. Every time I ran this on P1, I got 14 seconds every time. Every time, right? That's predictable, right? And it is coming back. There's a total number of rows back, and there's not. So it's doing a bunch of cross joins. So I should get 160,000 rows back. If we look at that, we're telling, okay, it took roughly 14 seconds, right? The elapsed time, okay? So is this done? Yep, that took 49.50 seconds. This one's still running, right? And this will probably take, because it's a basic, there's only 5 DTUs, and it's doing a bunch of cross joins, and if you're familiar with cross joins, you sort of want to stay away from cross joins, right? So these are poor queries written on purpose, okay? So this will probably take 2 minutes and something, right? So if I go execute this again, this should take again 14 seconds. This is the premium, right? So again, spot on, should take 14 seconds. I always think, you guys are familiar with the Jeopardy show? I always think the Jeopardy theme song should play when you're waiting, just to make it interesting. All right, so yep, 14 seconds, all done, okay? And if we were to run the standard again, the standard would probably take anywhere between 49 and 50 seconds every time. So the purpose of this is to say, you will get, this is the predictable performance. Now, if you've been, I'm gonna throw a caveat out there, because we've heard, if you've been reading like on some of the blogs and things, or some of the, not social media, forums and things like that, people are screaming because they're like, you know what? Hey, I went to standard or something like that, and I'm getting worse performance than I'm getting from web and business. You might, right? But you're not going to get that predictable performance day after day after day, right? So what we tell them is, okay, run that again tomorrow and tell us if you're getting better performance out of an S1 or worse performance out of an S1, right? So what we're doing is what we're saying here, and hopefully you're understanding this is predictable performance. Just because you get better performance one day out of a web or business does not mean you're going to get that same performance out of tomorrow or the next day or the next day, right? We're doing this because this is the guaranteed predictable performance, and we're actually going to talk about SLAs and things like that, okay? All right, thoughts? Yes. I'm sorry?
The number of rows goes up
I can't remember how many rows I have in each one of these tables, but you're saying the question is if I, you know, double, triple, quadruple, you know, or 10 times the number of rows in these tables, is this still going to run in 14 seconds? You know, probably not, because, you know, but it may take another second or two longer, right? This is why if you're a database developer or database DBA, you know that you don't test on in dev and then roll it out to production and expect the same performance, right? It's just, that's gospel, right? Because, you know, people, we've seen this a bunch of times. People test, they say, I got this performance when I was doing it on-prem, I rolled it out to production, and now my performance stinks. Well, you know, and that's because, you know, think about how the query analyzer works. It's going to create an execution plan based on what's one of the steps that a query execution plan looks at? number of rows. Thank you. And so it may go out and it may give you a different execution plan. It's definitely going to give you a different execution plan based on the number of rows. So you cannot expect that if I 10 times the number of rows, I'm not going to get the same execution plan. So I cannot, I cannot expect this to take 14 seconds. It may take 14.5, 15, 16 seconds. But what we are saying here is that I will get, you know, if it takes 16 seconds, it'll take 16 seconds every time. That's what we're saying. Okay, and this is where, you know, we start, again, giving the ability to say, all right, I'm getting, I spun up an S2, maybe I only need an S1 or an S0 to get the performance that I need, right? Different customers, right? That's correct. We will talk, sharding. We will talk about that. Is that what you're really talking about? Yep, and that's one of the patterns we are going to talk about here in about 2 minutes, okay? So hopefully that answers your question. Any other, did I saw another hand? All right. Moving on. What are we doing on time? Sure. We're only taking sharding questions. I'm sorry. No good.
Are these running serialized or are they running parallelized? So how many threads? It's one multiple threads for each of these queries, or are they all going to run on top of one thread?
I think it's one thread. Probably just one thread. I honestly, I don't know, right? Whatever that, so it's probably one thread because I got, you know, one query went open to, you know, one database, one query went open to another database. So whatever SQL Server's doing on the back end to execute that, it may use one thread or use multiple threads. We'd have to, you know what, I'll ask. Yeah. So the question is this a, you know, is it a, you know, if I execute a query, is there one thread dedicated to it? How many threads are dedicated to a query? I want to say, you know, this isn't sharding, but this is, you know, it'll definitely use multiple threads if I'm, you know, parallel processing, you're taking that one query against multiple databases at the same time. Right? That's multiple threads. Whether that one query window does multiple threads, I don't know. Okay. But I will find an answer. All right. So, let's talk about some of the common patterns we see. I've got 20 minutes, and there's no way we're going to get through so I'm going to kind of go through this really fast. But I'm going to spend some time on this, right? Common patterns we see, right? Single database, I've got a 500 gig database, everybody's hitting that database. This is common, we all see that, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but you're all familiar with that. Vertically partitioned basically says, you know what, I've got one, I'm going to take one table and break that up into, every table is going to have its own database, right? We don't see that a lot, and that's difficult because what do you lose when you do that? Yeah, RI. Your RI goes out the window, and now you're building your own RI. And you know, we see that in some scenarios, but this is not that's not that not that popular. We do see this a lot, single tenant, right? So we see this a lot within the next slide with CSVs and ISVs, right? I don't want to have to worry about, you know, managing schemas and, you know, security is important to me, so I'm going to basically say customer one's in this database, customer two's in this database, customer three's in this database, and on and on and on, right? We've seen customers where they have thousands of databases because every customer's a database, and those databases can range from, you know, 100 meg to, you know, several gigabytes or terabytes, okay? At that point, it's up to you. That's a management nightmare, right? Up to you if you want to do it that way. This is where we get into sharding, other partitioning schemes, right? And this is what we're going to talk about here in a second, okay? The interesting thing here, common patterns we see is the great thing. So think about the basic, the P1, the P2, and the S1s and the P1s, right? We're not with a web and business, that's a web and business, okay? But what we have the ability to do is say, you know what? Especially in some of these, you know, not just a single database. Like a single database, I have all these customers hitting that, so I'm going to give it a P3, okay? But when we start getting out into this partitioning and sharding scenarios, the world opens up because what's really cool is some of these sharding scenarios, you know, I may have this noisy neighbor, and I'm going to move him out to his own database, and I can give him, like, his own S0 or S1, but all my other databases are a P or maybe a basic or things like that, right? So I can get now more very granular into how do I want to start splitting up and partitioning my data and start saving costs on, I don't need a bunch of P3s, right? Maybe I have one customer that needs a P1 or, you know, a premium tier, but most of my other databases or my other customers I can put in, right? So I get that flexibility as to how do I start partitioning my data, and how can I start leveraging some of these service tiers and saving money, really, right? Does that make sense? I think this just opens up a bunch of opportunity here, right? Especially when you're doing sharding and things like that. Okay, this is just really quick. We saw this in this single tenant scenario where every customer's got their own database, right? So sometimes the databases are shared, like you put things in, you know, separated by schema within the database. But typically, when they have more customers, every customer is a database, and you've got one level abstract layer of code that's doing the logic and things like that, right? But this is where we get into this. This is sharding, right? And so I'm going to ask you again to download this deck, because at the very end on the resources, I've got a couple links. One is a link to channel line video that talks about the benchmarking that I already talked about. One is another video. It's an hour long on patterns and practices for sharding, right? And it's an hour long, but it's very granular. It basically says, how can I take a database, especially in the cloud? This is your over to your question. How can I take one database and partition that 500 or one, you know, a terabyte database, and partition that into multiple databases? So instead of having one database where all my transactions go into and having a P3, let me start partitioning and sharding out that data and make it very easy. So it's all about a scale and elasticity. Let me go from one database up to 10 databases and back down to one based on load, for example, right? Or maybe I have that noisy neighbor and I want to pin that guy to his own database and still be able to scale up and scale down without affecting that one guy. Does that make sense? This is the value of sharding. And this, with these new service tiers, give me the flexibility to be very granular and very flexible onto how do I start using these service tiers and how do I shard, right? Because what I can do is I can say, you know what, if this one database hits a limit of DTUs, scale up. Or maybe partition that out, shard into another database, right? Break that one database into another database. Or go from a S1 to an S2, right? Or something like that. So this is the flexibility I have to say, let me combine the new service tiers and sharding together. They complement each other very well, because I can now start scaling up. If I've got five databases, Father's Day here was a couple of days ago, right? Right? So women out there, you're buying stuff for your husband for Father's Day. You know, the great widgets out there, you know, greatest thing since sliced bread. Order it online. This guy has to be able to support that load. So he's going to scale up from, you know, one database or two databases up to 10, whatever, to support all the orders he's getting. When he's done, he scales back down. It's elasticity. Scale out, scale in, based on load. And that load now cannot be determined based on DTU percentage. So that's what I'm saying. This opens up a whole world of opportunity to say, so I don't get those bottlenecks anymore. Okay? Hopefully this makes sense. So watch those videos. Okay? It could be either or. I'm not talking about just storage capacity. It could be storage capacity, right? When I hit 500 gig or when I hit my limit, scale up. But it could be, you know, I'm hitting that, like we talked about, right? When you're up at 5 DTUs or you start hitting those thresholds, right? It's not just capacity, it's you're reaching your percentage maximum. When you start hitting CPU threshold or your memory threshold, because you've got a lot high OLTP or something like high transaction counts going on, let me scale out, let me partition out. Does that make sense? Right? That's what these do. That's the complement, okay? Hopefully that makes sense. We can discuss more, right? Okay, example sharded model. Let's move on. This is basically saying, hey, how do I, you know, in multi-tenant scenario, you know, I may have, you know, customers A through Z in this database, and customers, or sorry, not A through Z. That's, you know, yeah. So I have customer, you know, all my customers in this, and I want to partition that out. So I'm going to do customers A through K now in this database, and L through Z in this database. You know, and based on, hey, customer M is now getting very hot, so let me move him out to his own database. So again, the scale up, scale down scenario. Okay, business continuity. Here's several scenarios, and so let me just begin with this. So here's an interesting one. So we've got these new service tiers. We've talked about DTUs, but there's several things that we have to address when you're operating in the confines of the cloud, right? There's certain things, even on-prem, that you have to be able to plan for, right? So we want to be able to enable these applications to continuously operate during whatever type of event, whatever disruptive event that's going on, okay? So, for example, local failures, right? This could be server or hardware failure, you know, the power went out, someone kicked the, you know, or, you know, the server crashed, things like that, right? Or someone has the proper, this one's more hardware, right? So server crashed, bad memory chip, doesn't matter. We have to be able to protect from that. Number two is the rogue cowboy, right? Did a delete without a where clause. Come on, everybody's done. You know someone that's done that, right? An update without a where, doesn't matter, right? Or it could be some DBA who has the authority, but he accidentally dropped a table, right? Or dropped the database itself, right? He has the authority to do that, but for SQL Server, that's still a valid transaction, but it's still, you know, a disruptive event. But for SQL Server, says, I'm good with that because it's a valid transaction, okay? So that's number two. Number three, natural disasters, right? If you're paying attention to the East Coast of the United States a while ago, we had this hurricane come up to the East Coast, wipe out half of the East Coast of the United States, took out New York, right? A lot of these companies had their data centers and their duplicate data centers on the East Coast. They're out of luck for a while, right? We have to be able to plan from that. Or it could be, you know, malicious activity, right? Something goes in and takes down your data center from. So it could be natural disaster or malicious activity. And lastly is planned activities, right? These aren't malicious, but it's still a disruptive event, right? I'm doing a patch update. I'm doing an OS update, you know. Or you know, how often does Azure SQL Database get updated, right? Pretty frequently, right? We may have to reboot some servers, things like that, right? These are all disruptive events. Some are planned, some are unplanned, but they're disruptive events. And we have to be able to, not from the database side, but from the application side, be able to say, how do we continue to operate? What we're going to do is let's talk about this in terms of disaster recovery capabilities. So this graph, we talked about DTUs, but now we're talking about business continuity, right? That come with these new service tiers, right? Things like, new basic, standard, and premium tier, we now give you 99.95 SLA, right? So higher up, higher uptime, okay? Performance, we talked about that. We talked about the number of transactions. We talked about database size, right? Pricing, things like that. But what we haven't talked about is these things we're going to now spend the next 10 minutes on. And very quickly, I might add, are these new things. Point-in-time recovery, geo-restore, standard geo-replication, and active geo-replication, right? The ability to say, how do I now, someone did a delete without a where clause, someone deleted a table, how do I recover from these oops operations? Things like that, okay? Now, scenario and service tiers. This is really, local failures. This is kind of a quick graph to say, what's the value that we're adding in addition to the terms of the scenario, right? So not only do we get the DTUs, but to the kind of the value we're adding in for each one of these service tiers. So like DR drill, this is, how much confidence do we have in our service that's capable of recovering, right? Regional disaster, can we recover from that, okay? Load balancing really just says, ability to create redundant copies that can be used in the case that we have we need to do offload read operations, right? So my primary database goes down. How can I recover from that? Because when you create a database, you have multiple copies. That one goes off. My primary goes offline, but I need readable secondaries. Things like, how quickly can I do load balance and get that information out there? Okay. So quick information. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I do want to spend time on this, right? So a few more slides, and then we'll do another demo. So high availability, this is not new, right? This is how SQL Database actually works now, right? So this is just a quick refresher, so I'm going to spend a few minutes on that. But this is the foundation for everything that we've talked about has been built on stuff that we've already been doing for the dawn of time already anyway. We've just kind of surfaced it to make it available for you, right? So for example, you know, we write to a database. You connect, you know, you're connecting to this logical database. We make a write. Behind it are these three different replicas. Each one of these replicas are on a different machine. You guys hopefully know that, right? So when I create a database, all three replicas are on a different machine. When we commit, so for a write, commit waits for an acknowledgement from any one of those replicas, not just the primary, but from any one of those replicas to say, yep, I'm good, and then asynchronously commit to the others. But a read comes from the primary, right? This is what allows us for the 99.95. Right? This is how things are working. So how does this work behind the scenes? I'll go through this just really quick, right? So I've got create a database. There's my primary. There's my secondary. Create more databases. They're my primary, my secondary. Create my databases, right? See how things work, right? Pretty graphics. Yay. Okay. What happens though if one of my nodes goes down? Right. This is so on this one node. I've got a primary and a couple secondaries from other databases. So what happens? This is the job of the partition manager. His job is to be aware of, hey, what node went down? So node 4 goes, hey, this node went down. And, you know, partition manager's kind of aware of this already. He says, hey, what's going on? So he'll go up and say, hey, which replica's lost? And he'll say, all right, well, on this node was this primary and these secondaries. So what he'll do is he'll promote, basically say, all right, well, my primary was down. So if you look at this, he'll say, all right, I'm going to promote that guy from secondary to primary to replace that. I'm going to take these other, So take these secondaries and move these secondaries off to another node. We've been doing this forever. This is not new, right? What this allows us to do now is what we've done is just basically surface these. So basically what this partition manager is doing is basically doing a lot of compensation. Stuff that you don't have to worry about, right? This is, again, the logical versus visual administration. So things that we've been doing this for quite some time, okay? And then it keeps going, all right? So again, because of this, this is what the technology that we've been doing already behind the scenes, this is what allows us to do the things that we've already talked about, right? Create a new replica, synchronize data, stay consistent, detect fails, fail over, things we already done, and also allows us to start doing things like this that we're going to talk about now, which is point-in-time restore, geo-recovery, things like that. So let's take the last few minutes and talk about this, okay? Ever since Azure SQL Database has been around, right, we've been taking backups, okay? What we get now is ability to say, I got a slide out here. Let me just jump to the, nope, I got a slide out here. Is it after that? Oh, where's my slide? Okay, let me talk about this. All right. So point-in-time restore. This is the ability to say, based on the service tier, gives you the ability to say, how far can I go back and restore? So we take full backups once a week, diff backups once a day, log backups every 5 minutes. So daily and weekly backups, they're automatically uploaded to geo-redundant storage so that you have the ability to restore from those. For example, in the geo-restore, I could say, you know what, my data center was just down, let me go back and get one of those backups, restore it to a different data center type of thing, right? What's important here is this tiered retention policy. We are always continuing to keep these backups, but if you do a basic, we'll keep those backups for 7 days. If you do standard, it's 14 days. Premium, it's 30. I think it's actually 35 days. Okay, we keep those. What does point-in-time restore actually allow you to do? And I don't have to show you this in demo. You can actually, through the portal, say, let me go back within 7 days, 14 days, or 35 days, and let me restore from a specific point in time to the second, right? To the second. So not just a day. Let me go back and say, I want to restore from September 28th at 2:32 in the morning to the second and restore, right? And get granular and say, you know, what information do I want to restore? That's point in time restore because we're keeping these backups. Give me the ability to restore from a point in time, right? And based on the service tier, you get this information. Yes?
Can you restore them to another database?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Okay. Geo-restore, because we only got 2 minutes left. Geo-restore, active geo-replication, and standard geo-replication. This is the ability to say, give me asynchronous, so give me readable copies and asynchronous copies, right? So, for example, one of the demos, let me just jump out and do I don't know. We got 1 minute left. You guys want to stick around for a quick demo? Okay. Let me do this. All right. So I got SQL database up here. Let me close these. I don't need these anymore. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to go out here to, where's my mouse? This, I'm going to go georeplication, right? Ooh, oh, I need to go to, sorry, and do P1. Georeplication, and georeplication just says, come on. Oh, where's my georeplication? Oh, yeah, at, you're right, thank you, at secondary, right? I can say where to go, right? And what's my target server in that, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, make this a georeplication. I'm going to say online read only. So let's see. I want a, so I'm going to move this to East US. Okay. And I'm going to choose in that, I'm going to say that server, right? Yes. This just basically says, we're going to start charging you more money for this because you now have data actually leaving the data center, right? So it shouldn't be that bad. So now if we actually go out, you see, okay, we got a new database, a new P1. So if we actually go out to our list of databases, we should see a new P1 database appearing somewhere. Yeah, it should actually, to add secondary for database P1, so it should show up here. Oh, you know what? Hold on. There it is. Yeah, thank you. It takes a minute for the portal to refresh. Right. Okay, so what it's doing is actually creating that database, right? And what I'm going to do is very quickly, let me go out and let me open this. So I'm going to go recent files, LocalDB, P1. And what this is going to do is I'm going to start, set no canon, it's going to start just inserting a bunch of data into this database. But because now I have done an active georeplication secondary to that database in East US, right, what I'm going to do here, and I may need to do this real quick. So bear with me. We're just a couple minutes overdue, but let me just do this really fast. Let me go to my East US. I should have done this earlier. Let me add this. One. And please do not put 0.0.0.0 to 0.0.0.0. That opens it up to everybody. All right. Do you want to do that? Did I save that? Okay, and then, so what I'm going to do, let me grab for my, it's my East US server, let me grab this, because I'm going to grab, apologize for holding you up, this is actually a pretty cool demo. Didn't think, this is typically a 75-minute session. All right, hopefully this will work, this will connect. Did I place that right? Yep. And okay, so when this connects, we should see our P1 over in East US. Okay, come on, hurry, 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 hurry. So this one I'm going to do over here, I'm going to set to P1 on this one. And over here, you should see there's my P1. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually open for P1. I'm going to actually open, this file right here. So what this is doing is remote DB. Which server is this going to? Perfect. All right. So what this is doing, let's kick this off, right? And set no count on. I don't need, we'll select count. Okay. So there should be no records here. Okay. Right. But what I'm going to do is now is I'm going to run this, and just insert data, okay? It's just going to start inserting data. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to go over and run this. Because what this is doing is this is just doing a bunch of reads, right? So this will take a second, but we'll see. There should be, like that's running. There should be no data in here. So this will take a second. This is going to start inserting data. Anytime, right? Inserting rows, inserting. Okay. There we go. Inserting. You start seeing all the it started inserting all these rows into P1. Over here, you'll should start seeing, as it starts getting replicated, you'll start seeing, okay, the data being read from this other server, right? So what this is showing is that how fast, again, okay, there we go, right? So it only took, I didn't look at it right. What this shows is that I inserted into P1, my P1 database in my primary P1 in the West US, and as I inserted, because I set up that geo-replication, it replicated that data automatically to my P1 in East US, right? And how long did it so if we take a look at the different times, this took, 4:14 to 4:14:12. It's the same time. I think it's just the same time it ended. But it only took several seconds to do that, right? So this really shows just how fast the geo-replication works, right? So I went from, I inserted thousands and thousands of records into one. It automatically geo-replicated. Now I can actually have point-in-time restore. So I apologize if we ran out of time. Any questions? And I'm happy to stick around. I'll actually be in the Q&A here in the next session. It is asynchronous replication. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for coming. I appreciate it. Sorry we ran out of time, but happy to stick around and answer any questions.